Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We come to you 7 days a week to help you learn to read and speak American English. At the same time, you will learn important things about our world. You may listen on the radio or use a computer. If you hear us on the internet, be sure to print the words we say and save the audio as a podcast. That way, you can practice your English lesson anytime you want. If you are ready, we will begin today's program. An international human rights group has accused Israel's government of forcing thousands of African asylum seekers to return home. The group, Human Rights Watch, says once home, they could face time in prison and possible torture. Bob Doty joins us with details.
Some 2,000 African asylum seekers live at the Halat Detention Center in the southern Israeli desert. They can leave during the day, but must report back 3 times a day. Across the street from the detention center is the Saharanim prison, where more than 1,000 Africans are held. They cannot leave. More than 50,000 Africans, mostly from Sudan and Eritrea, have arrived in Israel in the past 8 years. In a report, Human Rights Watch says these migrants are not permitted to work, and very few have been given asylum. Bill Van Esveld is with Human Rights Watch. He says the Israeli government wants the detainees to leave.
There's been a series of laws put in place that basically gives people the choice between being able to stay in Israel but in potentially indefinite detention or being sent back to the country they came from. We actually think that this constitutes effective refoulement, which is a refugee law term that means you're being basically forced back to a country where you face a well-founded fear of some kind of persecution.
Some Israelis say that the large number of asylum seekers is a threat to the Jewish state. The government built a fence along the Egyptian border to keep them out. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says his government is prepared to remove those who succeeded in entering before the border was closed. But in his words, I want to make clear that these are not refugees. We are talking about illegal workers. Sudanese who return home risk 10-year prison terms for traveling to Israel. Eritreans face punishment for avoiding required military service. Even with these risks, almost 7,000 have returned home. Bill Van Esveld says the policy needs to change. He wants Israel to give these people a year-long renewable protected status that allows them to work and that allows them to be here legally. Some Israelis do not want the African asylum seekers in their communities, but others support them, recalling their own past as refugees. I'm Bob Doty.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA, Washington. Are you ready for a good mystery? Scientists say they have found the bones of a large dinosaur that lay undiscovered for perhaps 77 million years. Back in 2005, an American scientist found some of its fossilized remains
in the Patagonia area of southern Argentina. Nearly a decade later, after years of study, we know why this find was so important. Christopher Cruz helps solve the mystery.
Kenneth Lacovera says the first bones he saw were just a collection of small pieces. But additional digging resulted in the recovery of huge bones. Mr. Lacovera is both a paleontologist and a geologist. He realized his find was something enormous. The dinosaur may be among the largest land animals that ever lived. Mr. Lacovera is with Drexel University in Pennsylvania. He led an international research team that uncovered, studied, and described the fossils of the huge dinosaur. Their work took place over a total of 9 years. Their report on the creature, called a sauropod, appeared in the journal Scientific Reports. A sauropod had thick legs and a small head and grew to great heights. The paleontologist said the animal weighed more than 59,000 kilograms and was 26 meters long while it lived. He said its stomach was larger than a big horse, and this creature was young and still growing. Sudden major floods appear to have killed it. The research team now has 200 fossilized bones. That represents 45% of all bones in the body and 70% of those behind its head. The discovery gives the researchers a rare chance to study the structure, growth rate, and movements of its species, a grouping known as titanosaurs. Kenneth Lacovara named the dinosaur Dreadnoughtus shroni, Dread for short. The first name calls up images of huge battleships of a century ago. The second name honors Adam Schran, who provided donor support. The scientist has said people often express surprise that the Dreadnoughtus ate plants. And it seems it had to eat a lot of plants to get enough food to survive and grow. He said the animal spent much of its day standing in one place. He noted that it probably could eat leaves from many trees without moving. But Mr. Lacovara told Drexel University officials that the dinosaur could have been migratory. After eating all the plants in sight, it needed to move to new areas to find enough food to survive and grow. In addition to bones, the researchers also found other body parts, including the remains of neck tendons and teeth. The countless objects fill most of Mr. Lacovara's laboratory at Drexel. The neck measured 11 meters, and the tail extended 9 meters. That tail could serve as a powerful weapon when needed. Dreadnoughtus did not need to kill other creatures to eat. But Mr. Lacovara does not think the big dinosaur was harmless. He said he would not have wanted to be closed into a room with it. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is VOA, the Voice of America.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. If you are sitting down listening to this health report, stand up. Move your legs. Touch your toes if you can. Do anything but sit. If you cut down on the time you spend sitting, you might live longer. New research shows that sitting less than 3 hours a day might extend your life by 2 years. The human body is designed to move, but modern lifestyles and office jobs rarely give us the chance to move around. Just the opposite, says Peter Kaczmarek. He is a scientist at the University of Louisiana in the southern United States. He says that sitting is ubiquitous in our lives, meaning it is something we do all the time, everywhere. But he adds, that does not make sitting good for us.
You know, sitting is ubiquitous in our lives today. You know, we sit while we're eating, we sit in the car, we sit while we watch television, and many of us sit for many hours at work. So on average, Americans report that they sit between 4.5 to 5 hours a day.
Mr. Kaczmarek says you may exercise often, but, he says, even that does not mean you can sit for the rest of your waking hours.
We can't throw away physical activity. It's extremely important. We have 60 years of research showing us that. But sedentary behavior is also important. So even if you exercise for 30 minutes a day, you know, what goes on in the other 23.5 hours of the day is also very important.
Mr. Kaczmarek and his co-workers, or colleagues, are part of a new generation of researchers studying how sitting all day affects length of life. Such studies are rare. Mr. Kaczmarek and his colleagues used the few rare studies available to them. They found that cutting television time to less than 2 hours a day could add 1.4 years to life. Change is already coming to some offices, especially in the design of desks. A standing desk lets people stand while they work. Another design is called the treadmill desk. A treadmill is an exercise machine that lets you walk in one place. Even some U.S. schools are beginning to experiment with desks that are part bicycle to keep children moving. Mr. Kaczmarek says studying this problem has inspired his team to make a few changes in their own lives.
As a university professor, it is a very sedentary occupation. We're chained to a desk in terms of writing papers and doing research, but we really try to limit the amount time we spent doing that.
Mr. Kaczmarek and his team suggest a few simple changes. Get up from your desk as often as you can. Take walks at lunchtime. Instead of emailing colleagues, walk to their offices and talk directly. All these activities may help you live longer. And that's the Health Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Ana Mateo.
Explorations, a program in special English by the Voice of America. Today, Doug Johnson and Frank Oliver tell about the first airplane that flew out of the Earth's atmosphere. It was designed to test equipment and conditions for future space flights. The plane was called the X-15.
The pilot of the huge B-52 bomber plane pushes a button. From under the plane's right wing, the black, sharp-nosed X-15 drops free. It is 11.5 kilometers above the Earth. Pilot Scott Crossfield is in the X-15's only seat. When he is clear of the B-52, he starts the X-15's rocket engine. And so begins the first powered flight of the experimental plane designed to take man to the edge of space.
The X-15 flies high over the sandy wasteland of California's Mojave Desert. Up, up it flies. After 3 minutes, its fuel has burned up. It is flying about 2,000 kilometers an hour. Scott Crossfield's voice tightens. His breathing becomes harder as the plane pushes against the atmosphere. At that speed, the pressure is 3 times the force of gravity. Then, the X-15 pushes over the top of its flight path. It settles into a long, powerless slide toward the landing field at Edwards Air Force Base. Designers of the X-15 have warned Crossfield about the landing. They say it will be like driving a race car toward a brick wall at 160 kilometers an hour, hitting the brakes and stopping less than a meter from the wall. Crossfield lands the plane without any problem. His success shows, as one newspaper reports, that the United States has men to match its rockets.
That first flight of the X-15 took place in September 1959. But the story began in the 1940s with the X series of experimental aircraft. The first plane ever to fly faster than the speed of sound was the X-1 in 1947. United States government agencies and America's airplane industry realized then that it was possible to build an even faster plane. It would reach hypersonic speeds, 5 times the speed of sound. The first proposal for this new research vehicle, the X-15, was made in 1954. The Space Agency, Air Force, and Navy jointly supported the program. They wanted a plane that could test conditions for future flights into space.
The project moved quickly. The North American Aviation Company won the competition to design and build the plane. The design would be part aircraft and part spacecraft. The company took less than 4 years to produce 3 X-15s. The planes were not big. They were just 15 meters long, with wings less than 7 meters across. They were designed to fly at speeds up to 6,400 kilometers an hour. They were designed to reach heights of 80 kilometers. Their purpose was to explore some of the problems of manned flight during short periods in lower space. No one had ever done that before.
The X-15 project had four major goals. It would test flight conditions at the edge of Earth's atmosphere. It would leave the atmosphere briefly, then return, testing the effects of the extreme heat of re-entry. It would provide information on the controls needed in the near-weightless environment of lower space. And it would answer a very important question. How would humans react to space flight?
The X-15 was a new idea, and it was built with new methods. It was covered in a new material called Inconel X. The material was a mixture of the metals nickel and chromium. It would protect the plane from high temperatures. There were new designs for the plane's rocket engine, landing equipment, and the small rockets needed to move it in space. There was a new system of liquid nitrogen to keep the pilot cool and to resist the crushing force of gravity at high speeds. And there was a new fuel, a mixture of liquid ammonia and liquid oxygen.
The X-15 was never designed to go into orbit, nor could it take off from the ground. It was carried into the air by a B-52 bomber. The big B-52 carried the small X-15 under its wing. It looked a little like a mother whale swimming with its baby. At about 15,000 meters, the B-52 released the X-15. After a few seconds, when the X-15 was safely away, the pilot started its rocket engine. The X-15 flew upward with unbelievable power.
The three X-15s were flown 199 times. Each flight was a new experiment. Planning took many days. The pilot spent 50 hours in a simulator, a copy of the plane on the ground, preparing for his 10-minute flight. Once the real flight began, the pilot had to remember everything he learned. He had to work quickly and exactly. All his movements were made against a force that could reach 6 times the power of gravity. He had to struggle to reach forward for the controls while being pushed back hard in his seat. A delay of even 1 second could affect the information being collected. It could change the plane's path just enough to destroy the pilot's chance of a safe landing.
The X-15 set height and speed records greater than those expected. The number 3 plane climbed more than 107 kilometers above the Earth. The number 2 plane flew 7,232 kilometers an hour. That was more than 7 times the speed of sound. The X-15 was the first major investment by the United States in manned spaceflight technology. Much of what was learned from its flights speeded up the development of the space program.
The X-15 tested materials for space vehicles. It tested spacesuits worn later by America's astronauts. It tested instruments for controlling a vehicle in the weightlessness of space. And it proved that experienced pilots had the skills necessary to fly in space. 12 military and civilian test pilots flew the X-15s. A few became astronauts. The X-15 program lasted about 10 years. There were about 200 flights. Some of the flights carried scientific experiments. One was a container on the end of the wing. It gathered dust and tiny meteoroids from the edge of space. Another was a set of special instruments that helped measure the effects of the sun's radiation on the outside of the aircraft.
The only tragedy connected with the X-15 program happened in 1967. The pilot was Michael Adams of the United States Air Force. It was his 7th X-15 flight. Everything at first appeared to be normal. The plane reached a height of 8 kilometers. It was flying more than 5 times the speed of sound. Then, during a test of the wings, the plane moved sharply off its flight path. It dove toward Earth at great speed, spinning rapidly out of control. Atmospheric pressure was too great for the plane. It broke apart. The pilot did not survive. The X-15 made its last flight in December 1968. NASA needed money for its other projects. It decided to end the X-15 program. Many space experts disagreed with the decision. They felt the X-15 could have continued to provide new information about aviation and space. Today, the X-15 hangs in the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. It is in a memorial called Milestones of Flight. In the memorial, there is the X-1, the first airplane to fly faster than sound. And there is the Spirit of St. Louis, which Charles Lindbergh flew alone across the Atlantic Ocean. There also are copies of famous spacecraft like Russia's Sputnik and Pioneer 10. On the floor below these aircraft are 3 spacecraft command ships. One of them, the Apollo 11, traveled to the moon just 7 months after the last X-15 flight. It carried the man who became the first human to step on the moon, Neil Armstrong, a former X-15 pilot.
This special English program was written by Marilyn Rice Cristiano. Your narrators were Doug Johnson and Frank Oliver. Join us again next week for another Explorations program on the Voice of America.